Good day, everyone. Welcome to the H2 Dialogue, Fueling the Future. It's about hydrogen and its derivative products and projects that will be developed in South Africa and more broadly, the African continent. And I'm welcome to have one of the leading developers in South Africa, green e-fuels producer, Chris Eiderman, who is the co-founder and chief commercial officer for GFP, who is busy with an innovative circular economy project in the hydrogen derivative projects of products space. So welcome, Chris, in joining us for this discussion.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So Chris, so we're talking about specifically methanol, and we're talking about the project that you are currently busy with in the south of Gauteng, in the Vaal region, the Vaal SEZ in particular, which is called the Green Hydrogen Methanol Corridor. And that project is meant to be a catalyst project, both in Gauteng, but more broadly, South Africa linking KZN and ultimately producing e-methanol. So Chris, if you can maybe provide us a bit more context about this project that you're busy with.
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is now something you want to publish, and we're talking about the green hydrogen industry and give a bit more transparency to the audience on where green hydrogen plays a role and plays a role for South Africa, and where the projects in the green hydrogen industry play a role and can have an impact on South Africa. Obviously, initially, when you look into this, for example, the just energy transition, there's a lot of talk about the economical impact, the economic development that those projects could bring. We, with our projects, are positioned in Gauteng, which I think is a unique positioning, because the green hydrogen industry, which I call the green hydrogen-based industry, and the derivatives typically drive through the opportunity of export. And export means that we need derivatives like ammonia and methanol to carry the hydrogen or deliver the hydrogen products in a form that they are used in applications. And those applications we call PTX, power to X applications. So usually those are the e-fuels. And they are e-fuels because they are produced by the green electrons, by the renewables. We need renewables as an input for the power of those and operation of those projects. And then we have different feedstocks or inputs to then produce the derivatives, whether ammonia or methanol. And as you mentioned, we went the methanol route, and I think we will discuss a bit more about the opportunity on the methanol side because of the needs for the feedstock and the circular architecture that we are using. There are very particular benefits. Obviously, there are everywhere challenges and benefits in projects, and also the discussion about the size of projects and how to make projects actually bankable, right?
Definitely, Chris. I think maybe an important thing to also clarify for the general listeners is when we talk about hydrogen, because there's a big discussion around green hydrogen and then the molecule, the derivative product, either e-methanol, and your project specifically focuses on e-methanol or ammonia. And why Gauteng in particular? Because we know that for hydrogen production, generally, there's a requirement that you need to have water. And most of those projects are actually located at the coast. And why, if you look at Gauteng, in the context of our industrialization or deindustrialization, what makes this project so significant for the province?
Yeah, so again, on the hydrogen industry, the expectations are high. I mean, we have in South Africa the green hydrogen commercialization strategy that is already signed off since 2023, and the Green Hydrogen Society roadmap. And then obviously it reaches into the just energy transition agenda as well. So with high-level numbers, I mean, there's talks about 600,000 jobs that could be created in that industry, in that new industry. Obviously, on the back of, as you mentioned, reindustrialization or the problems that we have in South Africa with unemployment, that's why there's a huge focus on can this industry really bring that level of employment and economic growth and investment. But investments and the influx of obviously the investment that we need into the country is also driven by the need for the products that we can produce and to produce those products in the international environment competitively and according to certifications of different markets. The challenging parts in the projects now, they are very multidimensional. That's just on the technical side. But then we also have different dimensions on the legal side and even financing them, especially when it comes to the offtake, because the products in principle are not new. The ammonia or methanol, they're not new products. They're dealt globally. They're commodities. They're in the market. But now what are the premiums or what are the price differentiators on the green side of those products and the certifications. Obviously, there are different level of requirements in the markets like Europe or America or Japan. So those are things we have to look at. And when we started off and thinking about the green hydrogen in general, we also thought, you see that most of the focus is in the coastal provinces because of the requirement for transport to export. So to be close to a port seemed to be one of all described to be important to have the renewables around you somehow. I mean, in South Africa, we have them around us, the solar, the wind, but you cannot always have everything ring fenced around you. And the next level is as well the grid connectivity. So logistics, grid connectivity. We know that we have the resources in general. I mean, in South Africa, we have resources in terms of the renewables. We have space to build those projects. We even have capacity in the industry and skill levels of people that we could deploy into the projects. But obviously, there's an element of some talk about the hydrogen academies and then look at new skill sets because of the hydrogen industry. There's definitely a good portion of that, but a lot of trades are still the traits that we need in our industry in terms of construction and even the operation of a chemical plant, the operation on the renewable side. For us, when we looked into it and decided to go the methanol route, it obviously had to do with our partners, which we maybe talk later about how we got to our partner and the structure of partnership with, in particular, the German partners and also the interaction between the stakeholders. You get involved into a project, whether locally and then internationally. But we saw that methanol needing the unavoidable CO2 source, the feedstock, had a particular opportunity for us because we take this the CO2 from wastewater treatment centers. We see the sewage sludge or need the sewage sludge as feedstock. And we looked into that. And thinking about South Africa as a water-scarce country, even in Gauteng, to develop a project that can use, I call it compromised water. So water that or water use in our project, it doesn't compete with a residential use or competes with any other commercial use because we are already short on water sources and our water infrastructure has problems as well. Then we looked at that and thought it's a very interesting scenario to build a project that through the circular architecture with the feedstock that is used, which in many municipalities is a problem today, and that we could actually take off a burden, let's call it, from municipalities and communities and use the waste into a project as a value in our project, but helps to reduce environmental issues in the community, helps to take off that type of waste from the municipality. That circular architecture we found very intriguing, and that's why we engaged further and we saw the opportunity to do that in Gauteng. The next aspect you mentioned, the SEZs, to place the project into an SEZ. There are different benefits to go into an SEZ. You know the trade benefits and the tax benefits and the incentives of an SEZ. But for a project developer, it was also interesting for us to be in an SEZ because the SEZ is pre-zoned. And then you go into the SEZ, you are on industrial zoned land. The basics of the EIA, the basic permits and activities that you're usually responsible for as a project developer, they're fast-tracked. You know, there are certain fast-tracking opportunities on the licensing and permitting because we mentioned the multidisciplinary nature of those projects now. So those projects draw a huge list of permits and licensing. And that's why we're talking to you as well to actually look onto the legal and regulatory side. And there are many, many levels now on the project side to look into those permits and licensing specific on the electrical, the renewables. I mean, there's a lot of experience in South Africa on the solar side, now on the wind side of the project development on the renewables. Obviously, we have chemical industry today as well, chemical plants. We know how to build them. We know how to operate them. But to combine those aspects now in terms of the environmental impacts, in terms of the feedstock that we now require, biomass could also again be a compromise or compromised when biomass is used from areas where it could compete with food production. So if I have certain areas now to grow biomass to produce a fuel and it competes with food production potentially, it's not desirable from our side. Because from the standardization, we really want to make sure that is an unavoidable waste. It brings more benefits into the local community as well by taking that waste and turning it into value. But then again, the bankability, or really the drive to then get the projects into a financial structure, is obviously the offtake. And there again, we have to look into the local portion and the international portion.
Now, I think it's important maybe for the listeners also to understand some of the key aspects you've now mentioned. So in the circular economy, so there's of the different elements that you've touched on in this whole ecosystem, if we can call it that. So we have the municipalities who play a key role because they have the wastewater treatment facilities. And we're talking about wastewater treatment facilities where you will get the sludge or the waste product, essentially. That waste product you will then utilize as feedstock, as you say, for the production of methanol or e-methanol, not just methanol. And then the hydrogen, maybe just to explain to the listeners the different specific components. So the waste, the production of the hydrogen, e-methanol, obviously you need green power, either wheeling it in or producing it yourself on site.
Exactly. So first of all, to produce green methanol or to produce any green fuel, we need green energy. There we talk about green power. So those are the green electrons we mentioned before. As I said, you not always have the opportunity to ring fence a project completely to have wind and solar on your site, or at least adjacent to your site, but it's preferred, obviously, if you can do that together. But then also for the whole environment of the development for the industry, we have to look at all the wind projects and solar projects that are developed and see how they can feed in, or we could wheel energy to the projects. Because otherwise, we would only have maybe one big center, and the benefit will only be in that big center of hydrogen development. With now the sewage sludge from the wastewater treatment as a feedstock, we are looking at the municipalities that are connected or where the SEZs are located, and we have the blueprint in the Vaal SEZ, and that's why obviously we did tests and we looked at volumes and quality of sludge in the area, and we're talking to the operators of those centers in the area. The uniqueness is now for Gauteng, because for the water use to split water into hydrogen and oxygen, then again for methanol, bringing the CO2 source in and then synthesize the green hydrogen and the CO2 to methanol. In our architecture, actually, we have two pathways of the product. There's a pathway that directly from the waste, still a biomethanol pathway. But as I mentioned before, the biomethanol is not from biomass. It's from an unavoidable waste. So that's why it's an advanced biomethanol product. And the other route through the electrolyzer, splitting water, and then produce the hydrogen, the green hydrogen through the electrolyzer. And then again, the methanol with the synthesis produces the green e-methanol. Mm. And then obviously the markets internationally and locally are looked at to see what kind of markets then are interested. And at the moment, you will see the maritime industry on the IMO regulations on the requirements for the green fuels in the maritime sector, but also towards aviation, sustainable aviation fuel, and so on. There are markets with volumes that are huge in terms of the productions that not only South Africa then will feed in, but obviously other countries position themselves as well in this space. But again, with our projects, we really see the opportunity for Gauteng, because we have the sources and the inputs that we need for our project in the province. Even if we have to wheel in wind, for example, and we mix on the renewable side solutions on behind the meter solution, where we have the renewable source close to us or with us to produce ourselves, and then we wheel the other portion of the renewable into the project. So this, again, on the South African side, it's the interesting aspect of the regulations that are available and can be used, the wheeling concept and the power purchase agreements that you then have with traders or other IPPs to feed in. And that's important for those hydrogen projects, because not everyone will just have the renewable next to the project. And I think for the whole industry, it's also important that that interaction works between the projects that already produce green electricity, but then according to certification, again, we like to have additionality projects develop with the green hydrogen industry as well, so that the industry will also develop more solar and wind projects. We are talking about more than 40 gigawatts of green power that would be used to really power the green hydrogen space. And that's where then also the large number of jobs again comes from. But in Gauteng, with the inputs that we need, we see that at first through our architecture as well, we can actually deploy a smaller footprint of projects to make it feasible on a smaller footprint, about 20 megawatts of energy demand. where you can always imagine that if I'm starting off with a project that needs a gigawatt, it's more challenging in terms of our grid infrastructure at the moment, because the projects will still connect to the grid, will still be interaction with the grid, because each project will not just produce exactly the volume of green electricity that the project needs. Because of the intermittent nature of wind and solar, you typically over-design, you over-engineer the renewable side. That means there's electricity available that can be sold on top of the own consumption of the project. That again brings us green electricity and green energy into our grid and can help in the energy transition as well because of those volumes. But starting small also means in Gauteng that we don't see grid limitations on that level, you know, where we could start with 20 megawatts, not in Gauteng. We still have capacity available. And then also on the logistics side, you know, we mentioned the inputs now, the water, which comes out of the sludge and the CO2. We get both out of the feedstock, then the electricity. We discussed the power, the green power. But then when we have the product, you need to obviously transport it, get it to the market. And there, the proximity to the port was always mentioned, which is obviously very important for large projects. Because if we have now to transport 100,000 of tons of those derivatives across the country, then it adds to the cost of the products being exported into another market. And in a smaller scale, we also have an opportunity to show that we can produce, we can bring the product to the port, at least at the moment with the methods that don't have scalability issues. But then when we sold the product and we prove that the market is there and then we start to scale, we obviously have to stay close to the logistic solutions as well, like Transnet and rail development, to then see how rail development supports the industry and the transport of those products. And otherwise, obviously, some projects will be placed at the coastal environment, mostly the ammonia projects. That's why we feel that the methanol opportunity with the feedstocks and the inputs we need, they are available in Gauteng. Sure. And then with that availability and the positioning in the SEZ, especially in the Vaal region as well, it's an opportunity for a re-industrialization.
Thanks, Chris. I think one important point is, okay, if we talk about your company specifically now, so Green E-Fuels produces and the potential impact that this project has on Gauteng and more broadly South Africa from a reindustrialization perspective. So this is the last point you've made. For a project of this scale, you need a lot of partners also. So partners to support you, whether it's government from a policy perspective and incentives, whether it is technology partners, the German partners, and also other foreign governments' support. So can you maybe unpack that a bit more?
Yeah, when we looked at this from the start, the idea around a project like this was the opportunity to going from the green electrons to the green molecules. And that's for me always a base of explanation where we understand the production of the green electrons. You discussed the solar and winds, even if you would have hydropower opportunities. But the green electrons are traded in the domestic environment because you're in a grid. So you trade and deal with the usage and maybe the storage and trading of the electrons domestically. And when we looked into the energy transition and the need for the energy transition because of the climate change, our problems with waste, and then also the economic development. As a German living in South Africa now for 20 years, I looked back to Germany and looked at what Germany maybe looks for, what are the opportunities out of the requirements from German markets, but also what benefit then does it bring South Africa? And I realized that Germany as a technology provider, Germany also sees an opportunity to bring technology into the projects, but then also look at the project as a supplier of the green molecules once we now produce the green fuels, to bring the green molecules back to Europe or to Germany for their energy transition. And I realized that obviously the drive through the green hydrogen industry to support the energy transition on that side, that Europe will be only capable to produce about 75% of the green fuel that that market needs for their energy transition. So they will import 25%. So there's clearly an export opportunity, and the markets on that side have the directives and have the agreements and regulations that qualify for a premium, you know, that allow to sell the green fuels for a premium in those markets, which right now here most of the off-takers in South Africa would look at the green aspect of the product much secondary in the future when regulations get stronger on the carbon tax and so on. Or if the industry in South Africa would have off-takers internationally, like the discussion about green steel. If now the requirement for green steel would be there and then you are forced to look into your green sources, then the incentive is there locally as well. But still, we try to strike a balance of benefits that the international side is looking for. The benefit for us is that actually that offtake then makes the project bankable. And those markets are also willing to provide platforms of incentives or grants into early projects, because the whole economy globally is looking at the ramp up. How do we ramp up that industry? So in our project, we looked on both sides and applied for partnerships in Germany. Initially, we were accepted as a project for a partnership called the Consortia Development, where we looked for technology partners. We got accepted and we found our partners and focused on the green methanol, as we discussed before, in the circular architecture. Furthermore, there are platforms like H2UP. It's a ramp-up platform as well, a grant that you can apply for with a technology partner or with German partners. So the application went through our German partner. And we are now working on work packages in the H2UP grant through the H2UP grant platform. And then also in South Africa, Germany and South Africa have already established partnerships on the energy side. We have SAGEN, the South African-German Energy Partnership. We have platforms like H2UP, also the PTX Hub in South Africa, all executed or mandated, let's say, through the GIZ, which is a private organization, but working very closely with German government in implementing these platforms. You may have some other guests in the future on that side to discuss their grant funding opportunities and how to apply for specific programs. The GIZ also has developed Green Hydrogen Community Development Toolkit, which we are piloting in the project, which is one aspect that is really important to mention on how to include community and how to make sure the project benefits the local community. I mean, I mentioned some aspects because of our offtake or our feedstock that there may be environmental benefits that we're trying to bring into the community, but obviously the economic aspect is important. And that's why our project also has to partner with local stakeholders. Mm-hmm. Also, again, you have multidisciplinary environments there because our stakeholders are public and private. And public stakeholders, we are now in a municipal environment. There are specific rules in how to engage with public sector. And some of those rules we have seen in the PPA environment or in the environment of the solar and wind developments, for example, where municipalities implement IPP programs. And then how to structure and make the IPP programs bankable. And why is that challenging or is still a discussion? Because obviously PPAs or projects like infrastructure projects, whether only on the renewable side or now with the green e-fuels, they need long-term commitments, long-term contracts. And those structures obviously have to be discussed, have to be negotiated and put in place with help of obviously organizations like yours, because you have the experience in the public-private partnership level. You have experience on PPA and IPP negotiation, how to get to structured financial close or at first to FID and financial close. We have MOUs on the government side, MOUs with the Gauteng Economic Development. We have engaged with KZN and Northwest as well. So we see the opportunity to develop provincial clusters, which then also means that not only in the Vaal region, we can, from our blueprints, investigation shows already that we have enough feedstock and so on, we can grow, but we can also grow in the province. That means that projects that develop later on into the cluster then also provide economic benefits in different areas. And that was actually, for me, the interesting part when I realized we can develop a green methanol corridor with projects that are smaller, so we can make the green methanol production competitive in a smaller scale than we thought of initially. Obviously, economic scale is always reached by volume, but we can also reach volume to multiplication because the way that we implement the projects and with our partners, we have partners in our projects that come from the automotive industry. So they're used to package solutions. And the solution, and that's why we're starting with a blueprint to package the solution on the technical side, which is important to get it ready for replication, but also the legal side, all the engagement with the structure of the agreements, the structure of the engagements with the local stakeholders, and then obviously the financial model as well. Once the financial model is proven and the market is proven, then we bring our products to the international market. For example, as a pilot, we will run our logistics on methanol trucks. This is a product that can easily be used as a fuel on existing infrastructure. So that's why the proof to use the methanol in our logistics will show how the application works. And also the byproducts out of the circular economy brings us opportunity in bringing value into the community, because we have clean water as a byproduct. We have phosphate, which is fertilizer, as a byproduct. Obviously, there's oxygen from the hydrogen production. So the byproducts are important for the local side and for our local partners as well to understand what value can our project bring out of the circular architecture into the municipality, into the community. We can try to multiply the level on provincial level, and then we connect the provinces. It creates a corridor. And the corridor initially is the idea, obviously, of the production corridor, but then also to connect to a port, which will naturally for us now be KZN, to look at export initially through Durban, or Tikwini, and then via container, then later look at bulk opportunities of export. And it can even go further across South Africa, obviously, and even into Southern Africa, maybe. Yeah, all the stakeholder management is important, and stakeholder management means there are contracts, there are agreements between us and those stakeholders, and that's why we need a strong partner as well to manage the structure.
But I think, and that's touching probably also on strong partners, strong support. So from a government perspective, we know that what government has done so you mentioned the commercialization strategy from adopted by cabinet. There's a number of other policies, provincial policies, which I think your project is also specifically now going to be part of the provincial master plan for green hydrogen. But so there's a number of policies governments are doing to make sure that projects like yours are successful and get the necessary support. I think one of the important support is probably also the new green hydrogen secretariat, which sits at the IDC. In terms of your experience with government support, what is your further expectations? And are there barriers? I think it's important that we also talk about barriers, because then the stakeholders also know that these are the things that we need to deal with constructively. So,
yeah, obviously the industry is looked at as bringing investments into the country and mobilize private investment. So from the project point of view, we don't really expect investment from government. I think one really has to look at structuring the project that a project can carry itself through the private equity investment. But obviously, the first projects need forms of grant funding, because like in other industry, when you start off, the technology is still expensive, maybe more expensive than in a couple of years, and with volume of deploying electrolyzers, deploying the synthesis in volume, the capex goes down. Right now, we have to look at grant opportunities. In the partnership that we are striking between South Africa and Germany, we have those opportunities to look at grant funding. Obviously, the relationship with the DFIs, with the development finance institutions locally, you mentioned the IDC and, for example, DBSA. It's important to work closely with them. There are very important aspects of what we call bankable project development phase, which the institutions call project preparation. There was always a gap between the earlier stage, you know, you go through your concepts, pre-feasibility, and then really get to FID. There's still challenges, and those are actually the aspects we really have to look into on how to mobilize the project preparation and how to be in close discussion with those stakeholders to see how can those projects need to be structured to comply and then receive the support from the project's preparation part. Because once you get much closer to FID, financial investment decision or financial close, there are much more interested parties, you know, to look at your project. But when you're still stuck around the bankable feasibility, and there are already substantial costs at that level of project development. And that's why, again, our project hopefully sits at a sweet spot where the project preparation phase still has a budget that is manageable amongst the partners you have now engaged with and that we are structuring the bankable feasibility with. Because if you have a project that sits at maybe 20 billion rand as a project's implementation budget, a certain percentage of 20 billion is still a huge amount at risk capital. And at a stage of project preparation, to make sure that that budget can be attracted to the project at that phase. So this also shows again that smaller projects hopefully can prove a case with the different elements of the inputs that a project needs, sure, you know, on the feedstock security, on the electricity, the renewables, because the connectivity to the grid is still at the level where it's not the huge risk on grid limitations. It doesn't bring huge risk into the logistics space. So we are at a soft spot where all those parameters are in a reasonable level to start. It's not that a project like ours will bring enough change, the change that is needed. We need much bigger project and we need more projects, but we need projects to start. And those projects, I think, have a benefit if those projects have parameters around them that are easier to achieve right now, that they're easier to achieve from the inputs that the project needs. And then also the outputs that are produced are easier to manage in terms of the offtake to bring it into the market and then prove the market that the input can work and then scale. You know, I think that's the most important message from our side, to look at the scale of those projects because they have parameters that can be managed today. And then those parameters implemented show how we can scale.
How we can scale up.
You know, and then the investors feel more comfortable when they see the first project coming into the market. So not everything has to jump from gray to 100% green.
Yeah.
You know, so
gradually get there.
You can gradually get there. Methanol also helps us to gradually get there because you can easily blend it in. It's using in existing infrastructures. You know, we don't have to change on the logistics side the tanks or the storage facilities, you know, for methanol.
The same
infrastructure. And they're really easy to be reused and bring the production into that and then scale again. Obviously, on the local side, we will be involved and discuss with other partners as well, other projects. We like to interact with other projects, with other developers. I'm not saying that every project will have its own hydrogen academy, own skill development center per project. But obviously, the industry and with the Vale SEZ as well, we have discussions to have a regional platform and skill developments. We're working with local partners, non-profit organizations like Leparo. Leparo is a company that works with the mining industry as well. Also with stakeholders on the public side, you know, working with the provinces on a program. It's called the Green Economy Support Program, where there we have skill development discussions on what this new green economy needs, you know, what kind of jobs. And that's not only individual jobs, but also looking at regional or local SMMEs. How can we uplift those SMMEs to be suppliers or service providers into the project, which then again has to do with certification, you know, what kind of certification is needed. Yeah, sometimes, as I say, you need to walk before you run.
Correct.
And I think, yeah, we're starting to walk. maybe still crawling in some areas. But yeah, we're starting to walk. And so it's a good start and hopefully proves that South Africa can produce these hydrogen-based products. Aside from the derivative, as you mentioned, there's obviously opportunity on the manufacturing side where we look at South African activities to use, in particular, the commodities that are available in our areas, you know, to go towards the hydrogen products, whether the fuel cells or the electrolyzers and so on. So there's manufacturing opportunities. Yeah. So the whole industry, as we said, has multiple levels of opportunities. From my perspective, the derivatives, the ammonia and the methanol are, I think, an early opportunity to just prove and bring products into the export market to start something, because then automatically with the projects we deploy the components that then eventually also can be localized, you know, skill developments, technology transfer, then the opportunities hopefully multiply with the projects as well. The positioning in Gauteng, we hope, is something that all the stakeholders will appreciate and see how a project position like ours is just a very unique building block. And it's not the only way to do it. It's something that we want to prove because of the circular economy and the opportunities here. And then the scalability, other projects that we also need placed in the coastal provinces and They're very big projects that are placed there, and we hope that the whole industry will deliver to South Africa what we all hope this new economy and this new industry can deliver to South Africa.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate that you took time out of your day to actually come and be with us to do this podcast. I hope the listeners have found this interesting and insightful, and also just indicates what's happening in the market in South Africa, in particular with the green economy. There's a lot of exciting projects, and this is one of those exciting projects that I think will deliver significant opportunities for Gauteng, but more broadly the South African economy in various segments of our society. So we look forward to all of these successes for South Africa. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.